Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the October 13th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, welcome aboard, everyone, as we gather for another hour of discussion concerning all things related to our nation's space program. We've had another busy week up in space here at the Cape, and right now in the streets of Los Angeles, of all places, as Space Shuttle Endeavour makes its way from LAX to the California Science Center. The trip began yesterday, about to finish tonight. Everything going well so far with that move. We're also another week closer to the election, with no mention of the space program coming from the vice presidential candidates during their debate on Thursday, and perhaps that's as to be expected. We'll get into all of these topics today with the help of my guest today, Jim Muncy, a space policy expert and space program advocate who's based in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Plus, of course, we'll let you know when we might expect the next launch from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and if that weren't enough, we certainly do invite you to call into this live program. Let us know what's on your mind about the space program. Perhaps you have a question about spaceflight in general or would like to make a comment about something we're discussing. We sure do invite your participation. 321-768-1240 is the number to call. If you're a little shy about being on the phone, you can send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com, and we'll get to your questions, comments just as quickly as possible. Well, next up here, as we begin our program, I will offer my more or less weekly broadcast blog, what we call Orbital Inclinations. With the launch last Sunday of a Falcon 9 rocket and subsequent berthing of a Dragon capsule to the International Space Station on Wednesday, it really is true that we have entered a new era in space exploration. Just like all the press releases and stories and hype from NASA and SpaceX have claimed. You know, although what happened this past week had first happened in May, that earlier mission was considered a test flight only to demonstrate that SpaceX was ready for the job of delivering cargo to the space station. This week's flight was, in fact, the real deal, the first of 12 such commercial missions that SpaceX is supposed to fly for NASA under their $1.6 billion contract. Now, in case you're wondering what makes this a new era, well, it's in the nature of the contract, the way that NASA is doing business with SpaceX, that really does make this worthy of using the phrase opening a new era in spaceflight. Why is that? Well, historically, NASA as a government agency has used and still uses in other areas what's called a cost-plus contract to get the job done, whatever that job may be. With cost plus, NASA tells the company what it needs in very specific language and then essentially micromanages every detail of the effort along the way. And of course, this is all done in the name of mission success and safety. The selected company then charges NASA for the work, and if the actual costs don't cover the original estimates, well, the government pays the difference. And on top of all that, NASA awards the contractor a bonus fee that is based on how well the company is doing on the contract overall. Now, it was under this way of doing business that, well, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Skylab, the space shuttle, those programs were all conducted that way and, you know, to success and historic acclaim. But what's new here with SpaceX is that NASA is using a fixed price contract, not cost plus, fixed price contract to get the job done. That's true also of NASA's contract with Orbital Sciences, which is to use their new Antares rocket also to deliver cargo to the orbiting outpost. Now, with the fixed price contract, this is where NASA tells industry in great detail what it needs and then buys the service or products outright without instructing the company exactly how to do that job at every step. Sort of reminds me of what you or I might do in going to a new car dealer and telling the salesperson what kind of car you want and with what options, and then after agreeing on a specific price, the car is then built and delivered. Now, you don't have to pay extra if the car maker's costs go up for whatever reasons or there's some kind of problem at the factory, nor do you have any say in exactly how the car maker does its job. Your only concern is that the final product is delivered and works to your satisfaction. Of course, NASA and SpaceX are working together more closely than you would with a car maker. This is, after all, rocketry. But the basic idea behind the contractual relationship is the same. Now, put another way, a lot of people refer to this way, under a cost-plus contract, NASA has oversight over all of the operations. But with a fixed-price contract, the space agency has insight into what's going on. Now, it's supposed to be a more efficient, less expensive way of doing business, and with the SpaceX flights to the space station, it's a major break from the way things have been done in the past, especially where human spaceflight is concerned. Now, we're getting our feet wet now with cargo flights, but it's under this same contract scenario that NASA's operating its commercial crew program to launch astronauts on privately built and operated launch vehicles. Will it work in the long run? Is this the best way for the government to do business when it comes to space exploration? Can private industry safely deliver the goods without NASA looking over their shoulder at every step? You know, those are the questions people are asking as this new era begins. And we're already getting our first test of this new era with the first official launch under the commercial cargo contract. Although the Dragon spacecraft is safely berthed to the space station right now and the three astronauts on board have already unpacked their new supplies and enjoyed some real vanilla and chocolate swirl ice cream that was waiting for them inside a freezer, the launch itself was not as picture-perfect as it may have appeared. 1 minute, 19 seconds after launch, one of the rocket's 9 first-stage Merlin engines shut down after losing pressure for reasons unknown as of yet. When this happened, several panels on the rocket ejected as designed and were seen falling from the vehicle, making it seem like the engine exploded to everyone who was watching the tracking camera view below. SpaceX said later the engine did not explode, a fact they knew because they continued to receive telemetry from the engine after it shut down and as the rocket continued to climb toward orbit. With 8 other good engines still firing, the Falcon 9 automatically recalculated its path to space, and by firing both its first and second stage engines longer than originally planned, the Dragon spacecraft was delivered into its proper orbit, bound for the space station. The only casualty of the incident was a small secondary commercial satellite payload on the rocket's second stage that was not delivered into its required orbit and subsequently burned up during its premature reentry. The owners of the prototype satellites say they were able to get some useful data during the brief time it spent in orbit, but otherwise the mission is being declared a total loss. So while the Falcon 9 successfully worked exactly as it was designed to work, engine failure and all, neither SpaceX nor NASA is happy about the whole thing and have already formed a joint investigation board to look into the engine problem to understand what happened and make any corrections for future missions, as they should. I'm hopeful the outcome of this investigation and the way in which corrective actions are determined and implemented will demonstrate to the space community that this new way of doing business is workable as advertised and is a path we should continue to follow as planned. So while it wasn't picture perfect, the first official commercial cargo delivery mission to the International Space Station has been a success so far. Of course, the Dragon capsule must still return to Earth later this month, and it's successfully splashed down the Pacific Ocean. So it's not over yet, but there's no denying we truly have entered a new era of space exploration, and I can't wait for what's next. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. Stay tuned now as we take our first break. We'll be back to be joined by space policy guru Jim Muncy from our nation's capital. I'm Jim Banky, and you are listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call. To participate in the program today, you can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, as we count down the days towards the presidential election, we continue to look at what the candidates are saying and not saying about what their views are on the space program. We've spent some time on this program discussing that, usually from the local angle, of course, as it affects us here on the Space Coast. But what is the view of all this from the perspective of someone who lives and works in our nation's capital and has his finger on the pulse and the experienced eye, I might add, of how the decisions about our space program are made and who makes them and why? Well, that's what we're going to try to find out today with the help of my guest. Jim Muncy is a longtime expert, space policy analyst, space advocate, and entrepreneur based in our nation's capital. He began his space-related career in 1981 working for Congressman Newt Gingrich, and he hasn't looked back since, constantly moving forward, helping our space program evolve as well. He is the co-founder of the space advocacy group Space Frontier Foundation and the founder of his own space consulting firm, Polyspace, and he joins us by phone right now from our nation's capital. Jim, good afternoon. How you doing up there?
Hey, fine. It's a nice fall day here.
Well, at least you probably have color leaves turning or something like that by now.
Yeah, we're just starting to.
Well, we don't get that down here. We get that down here for about 10 minutes sometime in mid-January along a five-mile strip of the B-line. That's about all where it happens. So, Jim, welcome aboard. As you know, you and I have chatted through the years. It's great to have you on the show. I want to kind of let folks know about who you are, and I've given a little bit of your bio, but talk about the space program and as it affects your life personally. Why are you interested in space, and why do you spend so much time worrying about this topic?
Well, I was born in Washington, D.C. I was born on October 3rd, 2 days after NASA was born. Some people say I've been dogging their heels ever since. My dad worked at the Federal Aviation Administration early on in its existence.
Yeah.
And he would go in and work on the weekends, and he would take me next door to the old NASA headquarters building.
Sure.
And he would leave me in the library, and I would just, you know, see these big charts of the early Ranger pictures and surveyor pictures of the moon, and it was fascinating. It was just so exciting that we were in the middle of literally, you know, at the beginning of my life, we were starting to go out and look at these worlds beyond ours. And it's been a magical time to be alive. You know, not just the heroics of our astronauts and the people who work so hard at the Cape and elsewhere to make our spaceships and rockets work, but really just, you know, everybody that's involved in this, it's a very exciting thing that we're doing, and I would argue it's important to our future as a country.
Yeah.
Because if we don't have a frontier, if we don't have a leading edge that we're pushing out, and frankly a place for people to go to create new jobs, new opportunities, new lives, we're going to turn inwards, and we're going to lose some of what makes America special.
So that's
what it's always been about for me.
So how do you take that, what your views right there, and I wholeheartedly agree with all of them, you know, what's the perspective then of all this in Washington? You know, down here it's local office talk, it's the space industry, it's our factory town, if, as it were. Up in Washington, space competes with all these other issues. Many of them seemingly more pragmatic to the day-to-day lives of people who are running our country. They don't necessarily think in the lofty visionary terms that maybe you and I and our listeners think about. How does space fit in up there? How hard is it to sell what you're selling up there? What's the perspective of our nation's capital when it comes to the space program?
Well, the biggest problem is, frankly, to get the members members of Congress and administration officials and other people to realize that it's not just about spending money in the short term. It's not just about a government program. It's not just about, you know, certain projects and certain contractors and things like that. But it's actually about producing the results in space. It's actually about opening the frontier. It's actually about enabling people to go live there someday. Because, as we all know, things are somewhat partisan in this country, not just right now in the middle of this election, but, frankly, for the last several years. And, you know, people are using space as another partisan thing to fight about.
Yeah.
And, you know, members of Congress and senators, you know, fight over, what kind of projects we're going to have in the space program as opposed to whether or not we're actually getting out into space. Mm-hmm. And they, to some extent, that's a surrogate. To some extent, they're fighting about projects and about spending money because they don't know how to talk about actually going into space. And it's very frustrating to me because, you know, you'll have people who during the Bush administration, for example, supported commercial space. And now that Obama's been supporting it as well to some extent, sometimes effectively, sometimes not, these same Republicans will bash commercial space as if it were, you know, the creature of the devil. And it's, you know, it's just, it's insane. But I try to stay true to my vision and my principles and to actually getting America out there, no matter who's in charge. I'm a Republican and, you know, as you said, my first boss was Newt Gingrich. And I was there for his speech in January there at the Cape.
Right.
And I actually helped write that bill that, you know, said that, you know, people living on the moon could apply to be a state. That was, you know, back in 1981. I mean,
right.
31 years ago.
We've been thinking about this for a long time.
But the point is that, you know, either you see space as something that the whole country is doing, that the whole country can participate in, that, you know, that this is about literally the expansion, not in a sense of conquest, but in a sense of, you know, just as we migrated west and we came to America from many different shores around the world, that's what this is about. It's about taking life where there isn't life right now. And the expansion of free peoples into the cosmos. I mean, either we think it's about that, or it's just about a very narrow field of science and technology, and why should the American people spend a lot of tax dollars on it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know,
why should we care about it if it's not something that they're part of?
Expanding the frontier, to me, has always been the big picture, because if you do that, then you get all those other benefits. And I'm not talking spin-offs. I'm talking about science, and I'm talking about national security, and I'm talking about survival of the species, you know, and just getting humans off this planet that has a limited life, whether it's you measure it in millions or billions of years. That's pretty far distance for people to think about. But we got to start moving sometime, and if not now, when?
So, exactly. So
how do you translate all that, you know? One of the things that I learned in my space advocate days is we can spend all sorts of money and have these huge, giant space events. Let's say we have a baseball day at a stadium and 20,000 people see an astronaut pitch the ball, and it's all very exciting, but not one of them write their congressman, and not one person makes that next step. And so the public can be excited about space. We see that with Discovery's arrival there in your place. We see it in Endeavor right now in the streets of L.A., How do you translate that to where these people who are making the actual decisions in your backyard are going to be affected by it?
Well, I don't think it's about I don't think it's about salesmanship. Ultimately, I think it's about trying to deliver the product that the people want. The people want to have a future in space. you know, Dennis Tito was the first American to buy, first citizen to buy their own flight into space.
Right.
From Space Adventures on to the International Space Station back in 2001. Now, Dennis Tito is, you know, a multi-hundred millionaire, has his own investment firm out, the Wilshire Associates out in California, a child of New York City, ethnic, but, you know, he's a rich guy. He is not, he is, you know, by definition, part of the 1%, as we like to talk now.
Right, right.
But he was welcomed to the streets of New York City as a blue-collar hero because he showed that it was possible for a person, not by any stretch of the imagination, an average person, although right. a person from the streets of New York, okay, could eventually go into space themselves without becoming a special anointed astronaut, with all due respect to my astronaut friends.
Right.
And what we need to do is we need to have a space program that actually does serve the American people, that actually does try to open up space for them. I'll give you an example. There's
Real
a lot
quick.
Of controversy in Washington right now about commercial crew, okay? And they say, well, commercial crew, oh, we're using these Space Act agreements, oh, Elon gives money to, you know, to Obama's reelection,
and
this company is doing this.
Jim, stand by right there. Hold that thought. We're going to take our bottom of the hour, 5-minute built-in hold, get you caught up in the latest news, weather, and sports. Then Jim Muncy's going to come back and finish that sentence that he just started, I promise you, as we talk more about space policy in our nation's capital. I'm Jim Banky. Stay tuned. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk here on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions or comments. The phone number, 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. You heard during the news break the shuttle Endeavour making its way through the streets of Los Angeles. And it's been a tight squeeze. My friend Justin Ray, who's out in L.A. For this event, reporting on his website, Spaceflight Now, talking about how just about an hour ago or so they were about ready to make the turn from Manchester to Crenshaw, which of course I'm not from LA, so I have no idea where that is. But they just had a big event at the Forum. He says the transport team had to briefly stop the shuttle and back up to wiggle a bit to the left, safely clearing the starboard wing from some trees. So it's a tight fit through the streets. We knew it would be, but Endeavour making its way to its final home here this afternoon out in Los Angeles. And meanwhile, back in our nation's capital, we've been talking today with our friend Jim Muncy from Polyspace, co-founder of the Space Frontier Foundation, and an overall outright good guy, if you ask me. Jim, we were talking about the average person getting access to space. You started talking about commercial space and the commercial cargo program, commercial crew program, Elon Musk, SpaceX. That kind of sets the stage. We cut you off in mid-sentence. Let's finish our thought. What did you have to say about commercial?
Well, just, you know, the whole point of commercial crew is to make it possible not just to fly, you know, astronauts from the space coast directly to the space station as opposed to having to go to Russia, but to fly more often and to fly more crew members there and to actually expand the crew of the ISS. The ISS is our first human city in space. And we can actually double the amount of research time we can do it at ISS by having a larger crew there. And I don't mean twice as big. So I would just hope members of Congress understand that the whole point of things like a commercial crew program isn't just to, you know, give money to U.S. commercial companies, but it's actually to open up the space station so we can get the $100 billion worth of investment we put into it out of it.
It certainly enables the capability. If you're a company with a capability to fly people in space, the government should only be one of your customers. Hopefully we will see other people willing to spend money to maybe just go up to orbit the Earth or go up to the Bigelow inflatable space station one day, some kind of a hotel in space. But you're right, the ISS is our toehold. You get people up there thinking about what's possible, people like Dennis Tito, and suddenly it all kind of opens up, and all those other benefits I would hope stream back from doing that. So the next question is, so now we face the presidential election, Jim. You mentioned you're Republican, so am I, but I've been very unhappy so far with Governor Romney's, what he's been saying about space. It's pretty clear that we're not going to see budget increases from him, and we don't have a lot of specificity on what he wants to do. Obama's got us going back to the, well, going to an asteroid into Mars someday, enabling a capability with a space launch system and the Orion capsule. That all sounds interesting too, but there's still something feels like it's missing. So on the one issue of space, I've been saying down here, I'm not very happy with either candidate. What's the perspective, especially as it affects us here directly in our economy and the Space Coast? What's the perspective of the space folks up in Washington? How are you guys looking at this whole scenario for the election?
Well, obviously, you know, different people look at it differently, so, but I'm gonna give you my perspective. I'm very disappointed that the Obama administration didn't really follow through on some of the ideas they had to change our space program to one that was more commercially focused and one more focused on new technologies, because I think the sort of compromise that we set, led in part by the senior senator down there, it only puts us in a holding pattern. Okay. We're going to have sequestration or some other, you know, substantial cuts to domestic agencies of our federal government at some point over the next year or two. Doesn't matter whether Obama is reelected or whether, you know, Governor Romney becomes president. So what's going to happen to NASA when there just isn't enough money to keep all the big projects going? We have to find cheaper ways of doing this. We have to find ways of exploring sooner, and not just trying to fill all the rice bowls. We've got to actually find the cheapest ways we can to actually start exploring and actually start delivering results for the American people. It's possible that Romney will pursue those kinds of reforms. That's certainly the kind of guy he was at Bain Capital, you know, where he, you know, dug into the details of issues, looked for the highest performing parts of a company, the highest value parts of a company, and invested more in those and cut back, pruned the branches and the weeds of parts of the companies that weren't effective. So if he applied that to NASA, I think you could see a lot more explosive activity at NASA and a lot more activity, frankly, at the Cape. Because we'd be focused on doing things as opposed to developing things that we might do someday. I've always thought that KSC sort of is stuck at the back of the train on how NASA develops things. It's, you know, Marshall and Johnson and other centers will sort of throw things over the fence, and then KSC has to make it work.
Yeah, really.
And so I would like to have a different kind of approach where we're partnering more with the private sector and having a lots of different approaches and lots of different efforts go on that will, you know, yes, we'll go to asteroids. Yes, we'll go, you know, we'll go to an L2 gateway station. We'll build propellant depots. You'll have a lot of flights of propellant from KSC and from other places around the world, so that we can start doing missions even before we have a 130 metric ton launch vehicle. So that's my bias. Now, you know, I don't know, you know, whether if President Obama is reelected, whether or not Charlie Bolden will be retained. You know, I think Charlie's a really nice guy. And he sort of has one foot in both camps, sort of the new direction camp, and one foot in the traditional NASA camp.
Yeah.
Clearly, if Governor Romney is elected, you're going to see someone new come in, perhaps a Mark Albrecht, perhaps a Scott Pace, perhaps a wild card choice, don't know. But hopefully, in either case, they will say, okay, NASA, you know, the worst possible thing to happen would be to say, we're not going to give you more money, and we're not going to let you fix the fundamental problems. We're not going to let you reform. We're not going to give you the political capital and support to make changes. The big problem under Obama is Obama hasn't wanted to invest any capital in NASA. So when there was an honest difference of opinion about what was the right way to go, he said, I need Senator Nelson's support. I'm not going to fight about this. I don't want to fight about this. Just go make peace. You know, find a way to make Senator Nelson and Senator Hutchison, others in the Congress happy. And, you know, we're only going to give them so much money, but we'll spend the money the way they want to spend it. Very much like, frankly, President Obama's done on other issues. And that gets us a program with an Orion project, which I think is important, and a Space Launch System project, which I don't think is important. And, maybe we'll fly a human being beyond low Earth orbit in 2021, according to the current schedule. But maybe we won't. Maybe their budgets will be cut and this project will get canceled, okay, by some future president. And, you know, that would be a tragedy because we will have wasted yet another decade and many tens of billions of dollars not actually exploring space.
Well, Jim, with about another minute here before our next break, answer real quickly for me. Just give me a basic understanding. When we talk about space policy, a lot of people are not quite sure exactly what that means. And so what I'm asking you is, okay, space policy means what? We're going to go back to the moon, on to Mars, and we don't worry. We let someone else figure out about the architecture, the technology behind it. And in this case, you just mentioned Senator Nelson and the Space Launch System, which a lot of people have talked about as the Senate Launch System because the Senate said this is the way it's going to fly. How do you deal with all that up there?
Very painfully. I think of space policy as everything above the engineering or the context for the engineering. It can be, you know, the priorities for funding, the laws, the policies, the regulations, the economics, the business aspects. But also, you know, what are the real goals? What is the real strategy behind it? So sometimes architectural choices are policy choices. They're not just engineering or technical choices. Deciding that you want to start developing a heavy lift launch vehicle that you will need for going to Mars in 30 years, okay, you know, is a choice that what you want to do is have a heavy lift launch vehicle even now when you don't need it, because that way you'll have it in 30 years, okay? That's a management choice. That's a business choice. That's not a technical choice per se. And so when I engage in policy, you know, I'm trying to find out ways we can take the dollars we have and get there as fast and cheaply and plentifully as possible.
And Jim, with that, we're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we'll wrap up our conversations. We'll also give you the weekly look at the local launch forecast. Right back in a moment. I'm Jim Banky. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with a quick reminder that you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop always, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where you can find an archive of past Space Talk shows and text versions of our orbital inclinations. You also can follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. And we have a Space Talk page on Facebook as well, where your questions and comments always welcome. Now, as we take a look at the local launch forecast, we find that our next launch from Cape Canaveral, now targeted to fly on October 25th, a United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket is scheduled to carry the Air Force's X-37B orbital test vehicle back into space. Now, the X-37B looks like a small space shuttle. It's a winged space plane that has launched into orbit on two previous missions, lifting off from here at the Cape, spending several months in space, and then landing at Vandenberg out in California. Now, there are actually two of the Boeing-built space planes that have flown, and the one launching later this month is the same vehicle that first flew back in 2010, spent 224 days in space. Details of the mission are classified, which means we won't know the launch time until just a few days before it flies. We'll be sure to let you know as soon as we know. Meanwhile, for more information about this and all the various launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com. Keyword Space Talk. Look for the link to our local launch forecast. On the phone with us from our nation's capital, Jim Muncy, founder of Polyspace and also a gentleman involved in founding an organization called the Space Frontier Foundation. You've heard him use the term several times today in our program. Jim, talk a little bit real quick about Space Frontier Foundation. Give a little plug for what it does.
Okay, the foundation is a group of American citizens and some others around the world who are promoting the idea of space as a frontier that should be open to permanent settlement. We hold a conference every year out at NASA Ames in Silicon Valley where we bring together the leading entrepreneurs, folks in NASA and the Air Force who are interested in partnering with these entrepreneurs, folks from the business community, investment community, things like that. You'll often see us put out fairly controversial press releases.
To say the least.
sometimes praising people in NASA, sometimes criticizing them.
Yeah.
And the idea is that, you know, we're out there to call a spade and to say that, you know, we either are getting into space or we're not, and to try to push us in the direction of actually opening up space as a frontier to everyone. And you can go to www.spacefrontier.org to get more information.
That's great. You know, and Jim, one of the things about space advocacy, you've been involved, I've been involved. You know, I remember when the vision for space exploration was announced by President Bush in 2004, and the space community essentially reacted like, wow, here we go. This is it. We've been handed this opportunity on a silver platter. And then for the next few months, I found the space advocacy community battling over each other, with each other, over the specific details. And it got to the point where we couldn't speak as a coherent, you know, community of space followers to make our message heard in Congress. We seem to still have that same kind of issue today. What do you think about that? Can we all get along?
Well, you've got to understand that, you know, to some extent, this is about people's jobs and people's money and their livelihoods. When Bush announced his vision, you know, part of that was that we were going to retire the space shuttle. Part of that, you know, was that, you know, the lifetime of the space station might be limited.
Right.
And so people who work, you know, for those companies, you know, or on those projects within NASA, you know, started to worry, and they wanted to make sure that they had a future in the new program. And you have to take – you can't just sort of like pretend that doesn't happen or doesn't exist. You know, what's the old expression? No Buck Rogers. But hopefully what members of Congress can do, you know, and it's hard for them to do it, frankly, is to step back and say, wait a second, are we really getting there or not? Okay?
Right.
And, you know, one of the reasons Congress has been so upset is that, you know, President Obama, when he shook things up and canceled Constellation, didn't really show people, he didn't connect the dots. His budget in 2011 had a lot of good ideas in it, but he didn't connect the dots to show them how it would actually lead to human exploration beyond Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
He canceled Orion, which I think was a big mistake. And you've got to, you know, if you don't show people the big picture, they've got no chance of not worrying about the small details. And left to their own, they're going to worry about, you know, their constituents and you know, whether companies in their district are going to have any jobs or not. And
that's been a real shame to me that the public perception has now become space is a white-collar jobs program.